Okay. Shalom, everyone. Good afternoon. Today is May 6th, and we are here, wherever here is, in Houston, Texas, for our weekly Lunch and Learn. This week, Parshat Emor. And before we begin, I want to let everyone know that today's class is sponsored by Jillian and Mike Davis in memory of Mike's mother, Rose Sarah Davis, of blessed memory, whose yahrzeit was yesterday. And we thank them for sponsoring the class. And I'm also happy to remind you that if you are interested in sponsoring any of the Lunch and Learns or any other of the shul programs that we're having on Zoom, sponsorship opportunities are available and welcomed. As you know, the shul has been unable to bring in regular sources of income like aliyot or sponsorships of kiddush or sudah shlishit or breakfasts. So we're hoping that we will be able to sponsor classes. So we're very grateful to Jillian and Mike Davis for this. And anyone else interested, please let me know. Okay, so let's study. I have a source sheet that I'm going to put up on the screen for you all. And once I do that, then I will give a brief introduction. Okay, let's see. Ellie, thumbs up. Can you see the source sheet? Excellent. Okay. It should say Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. If you're seeing something else, then something terrible has happened. Okay. Today we're going to discuss a really beautiful idea, which is mentioned by Rabbi, which is articulated by Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. But just a few notes of background. after the first day of Pesach, a karban is brought, which is called the Karban HaOmer. And that karban is brought, like I said, after the first day of Pesach. This karban, however, was not done while the Jewish people were in the Midbar, while the Jewish people were in the desert, walking from Egypt, traveling from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. Only after they entered into Eretz Yisrael, this is a key point of the discussion, only after Bnei Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael, which is when they had to start engaging in agricultural work, did this mitzvah of bringing the Karban HaOmer become actionable. So before we look at the sheet, I will show you the pasuk that talks about entering Eretz Yisrael. It says as follows. Could everyone see the pasukim? Leviticus 23 on the screen. Okay. So we'll start over here, verse 9. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe l'emor, daber al bnei Yisrael. God spoke to Moshe, saying, speak unto the Israelite people and say to them, ki tavo el haaretz asher ani notem lachem. When you enter the land that I am giving to you and you reap its harvest, uktzartem et ktzira, you reap its harvest, veitem et haomer, et omer reshit ktzirchem el hakohen. You shall bring the first sheaf of your harvest to the priest. So you see here explicitly that this karban haomer, this offering, only was given once Bnei Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael. That is also the day that that Svirat HaOmer, that's why it's called Svirat HaOmer, right? It's counting from that day of the Omer. We count from that day, right? From the first day of Pesach, right? The second day of Pesach, we start counting all the way to Shavuot, and those are the psukim that we have here. Usvartem lachem mimacharat haShabbat, miyom haviyachem et omer hatnufa, sheva Shabbatot temimot tihiyena. And from the day on which you bring the sheaf elevation offering, the day after the Sabbath, you shall count off 7 weeks. They must be complete. Ad mimacharat haShabbat hashvit tisru chamishim yom. You must count until the day after the seventh week, 50 days. Bikravtem mincha chadasha l'Hashem. And then another karban is brought. Okay? So those are the psukim that we are going to focus on. So Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch here, I have a lot of tabs open, so it's hard for me to find the right one right away. Excuse me. There we go. Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch sees a very important point made in the fact that the Omer counting starts after the first day of Pesach. Okay? And that's point one, right? That the Omer counting starts after the first day of Pesach, and that it only happens once the Jewish people entered into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, only once the people entered Eretz Yisrael and started agricultural work. So again, two conditions needed to fulfill the mitzvah of counting. One is after Pesach, the day after Pesach. Two, only once B'nai Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael. And based on that, Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch says a number of beautiful things. Let's read together what he says. We're going to start right up here. It says, so that, mimacharat ha-shabbat. I'm sorry. Zach, you have a question?
Yes, I think that it's three conditions, Rabbi. What is missing? Okay. He's supposed to start agricultural activities.
Correct. But presumably that started right away when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. But yes, there has to be agricultural activities. Correct. Okay, thank you. Okay, so that, says Rav Hirsch, mimacharat ha-shabbat, when you have not only celebrated the festival of your attained freedom, but you have also brought to your mind before God the fact of your independence gained by possession and enjoyment of one's own land. So Rav Hirsch notes that doing this mitzvah only after Pesach has started, and only once you entered into the land of Israel, those two things are not just singular events, they represent status changes in the life of the Jewish people. One is freedom, obviously. So by starting the count only once Pesach has started, on the second day of Pesach, we have firmly in our minds that we have attained our national freedom. And we have not only have we attained our national freedom, we have also are enjoying possession of our land, and not only possession of our land, but as Zach said, enjoyment of the agricultural bounty of the land. So two things have been achieved already. One, our national freedom. Two, having our own land. And Rav Hirsch says that for many people, that would be enough. Right? What else do we want from life other than freedom and financial independence? Right? Think about the situation we're in now, right? We don't have our freedom entirely. And for many people, financial independence is a shaky proposition. Nationally, it's a shaky proposition. So we all have this in our headspace as well. I want to say to the Cantors that a couple that studies separately stays together. I love that you guys are in different rooms. Okay. But to my parents, I will say a couple that studies together stays together. So everybody wins. Okay. So Rav Hirsch here is saying that for many people, that's all we want, right? That's who wouldn't feel satisfied knowing that we have our liberty and financial freedom. But Rav Hirsch says that's not enough for us. And then he goes on to say, after you've earned liberty and after you've attained your financial independence by prospering the land, then you start to count. That's when life starts to count, because there's something else coming up. He says, so that you are conscious of both these possessions, freedom and prosperity, which in general are the aims which all national desires and all national efforts are directed, right? That's what we want, not only individually, but nationally, to attain. Then you are to consider yourself not at the goal, but only at the beginning of your national destiny. That's so beautiful, right? That's not the end. Those are means to an end, right? The end is the Torah. And so we start counting from Pesach to Shavuot all after these two things are in place, not because they represent the apex of our accomplishments, but because they represent the beginning of the ability to count towards something greater. So he says, generally speaking, this is the aims of national desires, but then you are to consider yourself not at the goal, but only at the beginning of your national destiny, and only then begin to count for the acquisition of another goal. Thus, this command to count is expressed in Devarim, in Deuteronomy, when the sickle begins at the standing corn, begin thou to count. Meaning, and here Rav Hirsch is focusing on the word beginning. While others leave off their counting, you begin your counting. While other nations would say, okay, we've achieved liberty and we've achieved prosperity, we're done. We say, no, those are not the real measures of our success. The real measures of our success are the acquisition of another goal, and that is the Torah. And I think that this idea is actually very consistent with the Rambam in his Moreh Nevuchim. The Rambam talks about what's more important, spiritual excellence and perfection or physical excellence and perfection. And he says spiritual excellence and perfection is more important. Spiritual excellence and perfection is more important. But first, what we have to achieve first is physical, meaning we have to have peace, we have to have prosperity, and we have to have calm in the land, and we have to have security, because only once you have those things, then you could try to attain, then you could seek out spiritual perfection. It's actually a very interesting way of looking at the idea of prosperity in and of itself. Prosperity in and of itself is a tool, is a means to achieve a greater end, in this case, spiritual connection to God, and in the case of Rav Hirsch, the ability to receive the Torah. So that's Rav Hirsch's first point. I'll just recap it, and then I'll see if there are any comments. The fact that the counting of the Omer can only be done on the second day of Pesach, when we have internalized our liberty, and only once we've entered into Eretz Yisrael, when we have achieved prosperity, that may be a signal for us to stop our attempt to attain goals. But says Rav Hirsch, no, then we have to begin counting. And we begin counting towards the Torah, because those two things are not the goals. Those are a means to an end. Okay, we'll stop there for a second. Anyone have any? See if anyone has raised their hand in the raiser in the hand raise function on the thing here. Okay, I don't see anything, so I'll unmute Zach. Okay, go ahead, Zach.
I would like to explain why I brought agricultural activity among those three things was necessary, because we did have experience B'nai Israel living in Eretz Yisrael, but they were shepherds, correct? Then when bad time started, what was the first step of Hashem? He brought them to Egypt. What was the Egypt? It was an interesting example for those shepherds to see how nation can exist. They spent 400 years learning what is necessary for nation to exist. Hashem brought them by giving them opportunity to obtain the freedom, obtain their land, and obtain their new social economic activities. And this considered as beginning, because they could not do similar thing in a nation which been remoted from all spiritual goals that we as a nation are supposed to achieve. I try to just make emphasis that in Rabbi Hirsch, key word is nation versus tribal. And this is a very important.
Excellent.
And since then, we never stopped to be a nation.
Right.
And
excellent.
It was so heavily embedded in us that even when we lost our land, we still continue to be a nation.
Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you so much for that, Zach. Okay, great. So that's point number one with Zach's additional comment. And now Rav Hirsch goes on to note something as well. He notes something interesting. Let's go back to the psukim for a second. He says, if we look back to the psukim, where we start to count, he says, he notes here in verse 15, you have it on the screen, Usfartem lachem imacharat ha-shabbat, miyom yuchem etomar ha-tenufa, sheva shabbatot tmimot tihyena. We will count off 7 weeks. But the word that the Torah uses for weeks is not Shavuot, which is another option, and which is actually used elsewhere. But here, he uses the word Shabbatot. And Rav Hirsch is intrigued that the Torah uses the word Shabbatot to classify the counting of 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuot. What additional lesson are we learning by the use of the word Shabbatot? And Rav Hirsch says something beautiful. I'll just set it up. We have to remember that we don't go directly from Yetziat Mitzrayim, or let's say from Pesach to Shavuot. There's a buildup, right? There's a count. There's a period of time. And based on that, Rav Hirsch notes as follows. He says here, then it goes on to teach that before the goal up to which this counting leads is reached, right before the goal, which is Shavuot, getting the Torah, before we can get the Torah, Sabbath, with its ever freshly recurring acknowledgement of God as the creator, Lord, and ruler of the world which man masters, and of the world which masters man, must have proved its educational and healing strength on us 7 times. 7 times over the course of that period of counting from Pesach to Shavuot, we have a Shabbos. And every Shabbos, Hirsch, here we have an insight into how Rav Hirsch understands the message of Shabbos. The message of Shabbos is that despite the fact that we, on some level, rule over the world, right? We control the world, and that's what we're supposed to do. That's what God told us to do in the Garden of Eden, that we are supposed to subdue the world, and we are supposed to try to achieve the greatest productivity for the world while at the same time watching over not to destroy it. We rule over the world, and sometimes the world rules over us. Every Shabbos, what are we reminded of? We're reminded that God is the real master. God is the creator, Lord, and ruler of the world. So we can't go from Pesach to Shavuot without this ethical moral idea that we are not completely in charge, that God is in charge and we do his will. Actually, this speaks to what Zach is saying, because on one level, as a nation, you know, one of the things that nations claim, like I said before, is liberty. A nation can do whatever it wants, right? Every nation creates its own set of rules, and within those rules, it does whatever it wants, and it's not really beholden to an outside authority unless it chooses to. Makes a treaty, or some pact or some agreement. But we're different, right? When we have a nation, and we are governed not necessarily only by our own internal lawmaking, but we have God to take into consideration. So when we go from Pesach to Shavuot, when we go from nationhood to receiving the Torah, we have to be reminded, and here Rav Hirsch says, we're reminded of that 7 times, that really God is the master. And it sounds like it's almost tempering the liberty and the prosperity, and recognizing, yes, that liberty and prosperity is very, very important. But again, it needs to have an overlay of the message of Shabbat, which is God is the ruler. And the laws of Shabbat, by the way, I believe, support Rav Hirsch's understanding, right? The laws of Shabbat are that we are not allowed to engage in creative work, right? When we say not allowed to work on Shabbos, that's not enough of a definition of the word melacha. the Hebrew word melacha, which is in halachic context, what you're not allowed to do on Shabbat, a better translation of work would be creative work, right? We're not allowed to engage in creative work, meaning just planting a seed, which is so simple and so easy and almost effortless. That's an act of creation, which we're not allowed to do. We are prohibited from doing on Shabbat because we're not supposed to exercise our creative power. 6 days a week, we're supposed to exercise our creative power, but on one day a week, we're supposed to sort of step back and sort of remember that God is the ruler. And so Rav Hirsch continues, so that freedom and the basis of independence, possession of the land, must seven times have received a purification. I use temper. So here it's purified, an adjustment by Sabbath thoughts, before we can be reckoned fit for the remembrance of that acquisition up to which the count needs, and in which accordingly the freedom ensured by possession of the land is to regard as a true goal. So even, this is really interesting, even before we get the Torah, right, what's going on between Pesach and Shavuot? Between Pesach and Shavuot, historically, we did not have the Torah. So even before we get the Torah, we're reminded of what the Torah means, that God is in charge. How are we reminded of that? We're reminded of that by the seven times that we encounter Shabbos throughout the counting of the Omer. What Rav Hirsch seems to be saying is that Shabbos is a precursor of Matan Torah. Right? Before receiving of the Torah, before we can receive the Torah, we have to be seven times over purified or tempered with the message of Shabbos. And this, Hirsch says, makes perfect sense. Because you remember, Hirsch reminds us that we got the mitzvah of Shabbos before we got the Torah. So not only does theoretically, conceptually, the idea of Shabbos have to precede getting the Torah, so that we are ready to overlay our national existence with our commitment to God, it did happen. And that's what Hirsch says here. For Sabbath is older than the Jewish nation. And in fact, it was the reintroduction of the Institute of Shabbat with its homage-paying act of Shvitat Melacha, stopping creative work, and quite specially with the release which this gives from the overpowering worry of providing food that preceded the giving of the law, and which was the preparatory education of the freed people to become people of God's law. What is he talking about? He's talking about the idea that we received Shabbat, some aspect of Shabbat, early on in Parshat Shelach. I'll show you those psukim now. It's in Shemot 16. Let's go to Shemot 16. Okay, Shemot 16. Vayisu me'ilim. This is the Jewish people traveling out of Egypt towards Eretz Yisrael. Vayisu me'ilim vayavo kol adat b'nei Yisrael el midbar sin asher ben elim uven sinai b'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh hashini l'tzeita me'eretz b'trayim vayilonu kol adat b'nei Yisrael. And they started complaining about that. And then God, they start complaining that they have no food. And then what happens? Comes the man, and God says, "What's the rule of the man? You have to collect a double portion on Friday, but you're not allowed to collect on Shabbos." So right off the bat, so first says, if we consider what we remarked on Shemot 16 on the meaning of the Sabbath of the manna, and which finds complete confirmation in the words with which Moses at the end of the wandering reflected on Israel having been fed with the manna, and its meaning for the faithful, ladat that asher b'levavcha hitshamer l'mitzvotav imlo. The whole test of not collecting the man on Shabbos was a test to see whether the Jewish people were going to follow what God said. So the whole notion of Shabbos was given before the Torah, and the whole notion of what Shabbos is about was given before the Torah. So putting this all together, right, we have a beautiful understanding of what's going on in these psukim. We only count, we only start to count from Pesach to Shavuot after the first day of Pesach, once we've achieved our national liberty, and only once we've entered into Eretz Yisrael, once we've achieved a degree of prosperity, as Rav Hirsch says, because, point one, the real purpose of prosperity and liberty is to achieve the other national goal, which is receiving of the Torah. So when other people and other nations would stop counting, we only start counting. When other people would say, Dayenu, that's good enough for me, I don't need anything else, we say, no, that's not. We need more than that. We don't only want, and now that's important to have liberty and prosperity, as I mentioned before, in terms of how the Rambam understands this. But that's not the goal. That's just a means to achieve the goal. And then we have to get some sort of education, some sort of purification. So we recognize that it's not all about prosperity and national liberty, but that there's something else. And that's where the seven Shabbatot come. And that's why the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuot are called Shabbatot, as opposed to weeks, Shavuot. They're called Shabbatot, because Shabbos has a special lesson to teach us. And finally, conceptually, the idea of Shabbos comes before the getting of the Torah, but we see also actually the mitzvah or an aspect of the mitzvah of Shabbos came before the receiving of the Torah, when God taught us to stand down on Shabbat morning when it comes to when it came to receiving the month. So if we go back just to the psukim that we started with this week's in Vayikra, Parshat Emor, right? So now it all makes a beautiful sense. Usfartem lachem imacharat haShabbat. We count after the first day of Pesach, after we've entered into Eretz Yisrael, after we've received this idea of Shabbos, all of those things coming together to create this, you know, beautiful spiritual picture of the purpose of liberty, the purpose of prosperity, and the purifying idea of Shabbos. And I think it's 2 points. I'll take Chana, and then I will make a closing point. So let me unmute Chana.
So first of all, I wanted to say that whatever you taught us today, it's beautiful. And it reminds me the idea of Hanukkah, about the argument between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel, about lighting the candles, light one candle every night or the 8 candles and go down. So the idea is that we are going toward Kabbalat HaTorah, so Ma'alim Bakodesh Velo Moridim. So the 7 Shabbatot bring us to high elevation of Kedusha. That's beautiful. One thing. The other thing I wanted to ask you, I think I know the answer for sure, but I wanted to get it from you too. When Bnei Israel brought the Omer to Beit HaMikdash, Lemochorat HaShabbat, did they brought it only one time, nachon? Not every day until Shavuot.
Correct. Correct. One
it
time.
Was only, and the other thing that I wanted to ask you, and I think I also know the answer, but I want to be assured from you too. So would you say that the amount of Omer is like a pound of Tvua, kind of?
The actual
amount. What weight is Omer? How many pounds, kind of?
Right. Okay. So let's see. See if I can get the answer to that. Let's see, the Omer unit. The Omer, let's see, the measurement was equivalent to 43.2 eggs, or what is also known as an tenth of an eifa. In dry weight, the Omer weighed 1.5 kilograms.
Oh. So it's like 3 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay, got
1.5 to 1.7. That's what I see in a quick check here.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. I always thought maybe it's 1 pound or something like that, but now
close,
it's more
close.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you
okay,
so much.
Okay, great. Sure. Okay. So just 2 points to end with. One is the idea of Shabbat that Hirsch is mentioning that, of course, this is sort of the obvious idea of Shabbat, but sometimes it's good to be reminded that when Shabbat comes, this is our opportunity to think about what does it mean that we're not allowed to engage in melacha, that we're not allowed to engage in creative work. So it means that what's the point of prohibiting creative work? And it's not just to have us rest. It's not just to free us to do other things, although that's important. It's to really help us focus on the idea that as much as we are creative and as much as we are obligated to be creative, as much as we are obligated to participate in building the world, we once in a while, once a week, need to be reminded that God is really in charge, right? That not we are not in charge. God is really in charge. We may not need that reminder this time during the coronavirus when we realize that as much as we thought we were in charge, we are not so much in charge and things happen which we have no control over. It's almost like we're living in a very, very 3-month-long Shabbos where every single day we're reminded who's really in charge. And the second thing is to remember that during this period of time when we don't feel necessarily so free and so in charge, and we don't necessarily feel 100% confident in terms of prosperity and how that's going to play itself out, there is still the opportunity to focus on other things and to recognize that all those other things are in the service of God, and we hopefully those things will turn around and come back strong as well. And in the meantime, we take the opportunity to focus on spirituality, on God, on family, and the insertion of the seven Shabbatot between Pesach and Shavuot is a reminder to focus on other things. And I hope that we're able to do that as well during this difficult time. So that is that's it. That's today's lesson. Anyone have any? I'll unmute. Anyone have any thoughts or comments before we say goodbye?
Thank you, Rabbi. It was interesting.
Thank you, Rabbi Gelman.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. All right.
Thank
everybody.
You.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you
for coming. Have a wonderful day. Have a great day. Again, I just want to state one more time that today's class was sponsored by Jillian and Mike Davis. In memory of Mike's mother, Rose Sarah Davis of blessed memory, whose yahrzeit was yesterday. Thank you for your sponsorship. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
You too.